Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nanga Def. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
And good evening. We are live here, and of course, our first Saturday host, Jana, joining us live from London with some amazing guests. And this is March. Many recognize Women's History Month. So, take it away, Jana.
Greetings. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Grand Rising. How you doing?
We are excellent.
How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Can you hear us?
Good. Okay. How you guys doing?
We are wonderful. We've got Dr. Stephanie Meyer.
I can hear you loud and clear. I want to welcome my guest today, Dr. Stephanie Meyer.
Yes. Hi. How are you, Zon?
Sorry.
Good to talk with you.
Yeah, lovely to see you again.
Yes.
I'm going to do a proper introduction, but I just want to say Dr. Stephanie Myers on the Female Solution Worldwide Radio and TV Network. I'm the author of Success Strategies for Black People, and I host the annual Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence. We're going to come back to that later. And I'm your host for today and on the first Saturday of every month. Here on the Success Strategy Show, every month we seek to help you and support you to find solutions to your problems. We are here to help you make 2022 your best year yet. And also, it's International Women's Week, so happy International Women's Week, everybody. To speak with our guests, and if you have any questions for our guests, please phone in on 515-605-9325. And if you're outside the United States, you need to put 001 in front of that. So it's 001-515-605-9325. Today I'm going to be joined by two guests who are Black women authors, Dr. Stephanie Myers, author of The Invisible Queen, and Dr. Hattie Washington, who we're waiting for now, who's written loads of books. She's written at least 4 books now. So I shall be listing all of them. And proceeds from her books benefit her Aunt Hattie Scholarship Fund at Coppin State University for foster youth who have aged out of the system and want to continue their education. Dr. Stephanie Myers and Dr. Hattie Washington are both members of Black Women for Positive Change. So welcome, Stephanie. How you doing?
I'm doing just great.
How are things? Where are you? Are you in D.C. today?
Yes, I'm in Washington, D.C. Yes, and it's great to be part of such a global network. I love that introduction with women from all over the world.
Yes. So also, we have your other guest on our live line.
Yes.
If you'd like to check your email, you can see the link to the StreamYard and join us visually. But your other guest is available as well, Dr. Hattie Washington. So, Dr. Hattie Washington, you'd like to greet our listening and viewing audience?
Hello. How's everybody? Hello. Pleased to be here. Can you hear me?
Wonderful. Yes, we hear you loud and clear, but if you'd like to join us visually, we did send you the link there, and we can bring you up on the screen if you like.
Welcome to the show.
Well, I was looking for it. I didn't see it, so calling the number. Did you send something recently?
I think you probably would have received it within the last 10 minutes.
Okay, I'm looking for it. I don't see it. Feel free to send it again if you don't mind.
Okay, it's in your AHP Kids email account.
That's where I am.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Might be taking a while for your email to process it.
Right, yes. Well, technology makes all of our lives.
Yeah, we know how the technology
is. We'll be patient.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you see, you took the words right out of my mouth. It's supposed to make our lives better, right? It's supposed to make things easier. It doesn't always work like that. Okay,
well,
my email is slow now, so I'm trying to send it to you again, Hattie, but my email is slow.
Well, that's why we have to be sure that our young ladies learn that technology and computers and that our young people can keep pace with all these changes going on in the world, because they're happening fast every day.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very, very fast.
So we see your book, Invisible Queen, in the background there.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed Ancestry Reveal. Of course, Zana, you can see that.
Would you mind?
Pardon me? What I was?
There you are. Yes.
Yes, this is the cover of our book, Invisible Queen, and it's just an example of the need for us to make sure that our young people know some of the heroes and heroines that have come before us in different parts of the world. This particular woman comes from the 1700s, and she was born in Germany, but she became the Queen of England, and she was on the throne for 57 years. And I was just so shocked to learn about her, because you wonder, how come we didn't know about a woman with black heritage who was Queen of England?
I didn't know about that. This is the first I've heard. This is the absolute first I have heard. Had you known about that, Zana, that there was a black Queen of England? I had absolutely, and I mean, I fancy myself somewhat of a historian, but that is one particular person whose story I had not heard.
Both black women authors.
Well, I learned about her by accident.
For Positive Change, which holds the annual month of nonviolence. It used to be a week of nonviolence. Now it's a month of nonviolence.
That's
changing
right.
Your response. And we have a lot to talk about, you know. I'm just looking at what's going on in the news today.
Oh, yes.
Incredible.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm looking at, and I think all of us are distressed at the idea of being drawn into a conflict between two countries, and war is never a positive thing. There are no winners.
Which one was?
So I think that when women are in charge, I think we tend to work more toward negotiation. Maybe. I don't know. I think we've had some warrior queens. I don't know, Dr. Stephanie Myers, maybe you can tell us a bit about the Invisible Queen and what her reign was like all those years. Was it a reign of peace? Did she orchestrate some wars? What did you find out about her?
Well, she was a fascinating woman because in the 1700s, most women did not get education, but she was very fortunate to go to school. She loved to read. She loved to write. And so when they looked around and had to choose a queen for the King of England, he was a young man and his grandfather died and the throne was open. They searched all over Europe to find the smartest young woman that they could find, and they found Charlotte. So she married him in 1761, and this is the time when the transatlantic slave trade was in full action, and our ancestors were being sold and traded all over the world. And she learned about the slave trade, and she learned about it from an abolitionist there in London. And she got involved, and they called it the anti-saccharin movement because the slave trade had to do with the sale and the production of sugar. And when Charlotte, who was very smart, very intellectual, when she learned that sugar was the basis of slavery, she joined the anti-sugar movement. They called it the anti-saccharin movement. And when you look at our book, and I hope you'll get a copy of it and you'll be able to read it, you'll actually see a cartoon in there that a man drew back in the 1700s where Charlotte was denying her children sugar. They were sitting at a table, and Charlotte was telling them, you can't have sugar. And the picture of Charlotte is very much of a black woman. There is no mystery that this author of this cartoon saw her as a black woman. And she was basically saying, as long as slavery goes on, we're going to boycott saccharin. We're not going to eat it. And that's what she was advocating. So Charlotte really, in her own way, was a warrior. She also allowed the leaders, the British leaders in the colonies. Now, we're going back to the days of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and the colonies in America. And this is when the American Revolutionary War was going on. She allowed the colonies to take pictures of her showing a black woman's face and show our ancestors who were slaves on these plantations and say, look, she's the queen. You ought to run away and help the British because she looks like you.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, that makes me want to give up sugar. So give us the dates that she ruled, that she was queen. What were the dates she was?
Okay. She was sworn in as queen when King George III became the king, and that was 1761. And then they were on the throne. She passed away in 1818. So she was on the throne for 57 years. And she had 15 children. And this was another amazing thing about her. 13 of her children lived to adulthood. And in that time in the 1700s, mortality of children, they were just dying all the time. Women couldn't have birth and have their children survive very often. But she managed to make it work. And so her ancestry exists today in the current Queen of England, in that family.
Wow.
Queen Charlotte was an ancestor, and you've all heard Queen Victoria. That was one of her granddaughters. And Queen Victoria is recognized today as one of the ancestors of the royal family.
Wow. That is amazing. So once this book came out, and I'm sure you've been lecturing all over about that, what kind of responses have you received?
We've received excellent responses. We have received responses, which is what we wanted from our black community, which empowers our women, makes our women feel, wow, you know, we've had queens in our legacy. And it's so positive for the young people to see role models like Michelle Obama and like Meghan Markle and the different role models that we have. Queen Charlotte becomes one of those, Harriet Tubman. But a lot of our role models in the past we have seen were people who were struggling, people who were enslaved, people who had to run away, the Sojourner Truth. They were great women, but they had to overcome incredible obstacles. But here's a woman who was able to be a queen for so long, and her husband had mental illness. King George III had mental illness. And
wow.
The most popular movie about him is a movie called The Madness of King George. And that was a huge movie. It made lots of attention all through Hollywood. That was his story. And they showed the queen in the movie, but they showed her as a white woman, not a black woman. But just imagine how difficult it had to be the queen of England and have your husband with mental illness. So she had to operate behind the scenes.
Wow. I wonder how many people have had mental illness that we didn't know about that have been in positions of authority. I can think of a couple I know that had Alzheimer's that were presidents of the United States, but I won't mention any names right
there
now.
There you go.
So that must have been quite a struggle for her, having to probably, I guess, hide that in some instances, because if the ruler of a nation is known to not be mentally well, doesn't that kind of jeopardize the safety of the nation?
Absolutely. She had to hide him. Sometimes they had to bind him to his bed. I think he had bipolar or schizophrenia, so he had these periodic attacks, which is what people have. But she also had a son, her oldest son, and he wanted to challenge his father for the throne. So Charlotte had to not only protect her husband and keep the country running during the time of the Revolutionary War and after that, she also resisted her son trying to challenge the throne and have his father kicked out and him put in this game. She wouldn't let it happen.
That definitely a lesson to be learned about how to handle that kind of situation. So,
I've not
heard before.
Can you guys hear me?
I don't understand why they...
I'm getting all kinds of weird noises now.
Right. So now what we're doing, we're going to bring in Dr. Hattie Washington. I had to close one mic so we didn't get the echo. But I'm starting off
okay.
To think that I had not heard. Of course, I know our children had not heard that in school, and it does make a difference knowing that every black woman in history was not struggling to get out of slavery.
Just one other point, and we definitely want to have Dr. Hattie Washington speak, but one other point, we did a book signing down in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Charlotte is named for Queen Charlotte. That is the name of that city.
Oh.
Charlottesville, Virginia is named for Queen Charlotte. That's right. And while we were at the book signing, there were several hundred people. Most of them were white. And after the event, they came over to me and to my husband and said, you know, I have mixed race children. I have grandchildren, nieces, nephews who are mixed race. And I'm glad to learn that you have told this story so I can teach my children. So it was very interesting to see the white adults willing to admit that they were excited to learn about Charlotte and to be able to educate their mixed-race family, young children, about this history.
Wow, that is so powerful. Well, Jana's had a little bit of issues with joining us visually, so we're going to bring her voice in from the switchboard. And, Jana, we've got Dr. Hattie Washington with us visually so we can see her beautiful face. And thank you so much for
Welcome to the show, Hattie.
Mobile radio TV show with. Of course, we have the wonderful and intelligent and brilliant Jana, the host today. And if you're just tuning in, you're watching Success Strategies with Jana, welcoming black women authors. And we've got two powerful women authors that are giving us some lessons in history that we did not know about and definitely changing the perspective that we may have had about black women. So it's such a joy to learn some things that we haven't
learned and to know that this needs to be added to the repertoire of what we teach. So Jana, before we take a break, did you want to ask a question of Dr. Hattie Washington? Of course, you've got four books, you know, one, Driven to Succeed, Lessons Learned Through Faith, Family, and Favor. And she's also fostered 100 boys and young men. I'd like to know a little bit about the fostering. Tell us about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I was going to ask Stephanie a few questions first.
Can you hear me
and
okay?
And we definitely want to hear from Hattie as well.
Yes, we hear
okay.
you fine. Can you hear her, Jana? Yes. Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes, I can hear everybody. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Young Men Project was not intended. It was one of those things that you need, and you just start doing it, and not planning to keep them for just one night. And then one night.
Okay, so Hattie.
And 1 week became 22 years later.
Wow.
So,
wow. Hattie, as I said, what I'm going to do is ask Stephanie some questions first, and then we definitely want to hear your story as well.
Yes. Jana, your sound is a little muffled. Is there a way you can turn volume up on your sound? Is a little muffled. Dr. Washington was telling us about her experience in fostering these 100 men and boys. Dr. Washington, were they in a specific location you had? You had a building?
Well, actually, I started off, I was assistant superintendent of schools of Baltimore City, and I was traveling to my school one day, and I just saw three boys on the corner in the middle of the day.
Mm.
And being from the old school and from the country, when you see something, you say something. So I just stopped the car and said, excuse me, why are you out of school? And they just said, who are you? I said, I'm the assistant superintendent, and you're standing on my streets in the middle of the day.
Mm.
So why are you out of school? And they said, well, we are foster kids, and we don't know what school we're supposed to attend because we don't have a permanent address.
Wow.
And I didn't know anything about the foster care system, so I put them in the car, took them back to my office, and called social service and wanted to know, as some boys, they haven't been in school since October. Here it is February. And I just wanted to know why. And it said, okay, so what are the names? And I tell them, so they're runaways. And so, you know, as soon as we get them a foster home, they're going to run away again. So we'll get to them. So I said, well, I have them. So call me when you find a home. And I took them home for one night. Then they didn't call, and one night became two nights, and then I would bring them back and give them to one of my principals that have some kids who've been out of school. So social service will call you, and if not, call me, and I take them back home. So this went back and forth for several weeks. And then finally I got a call, and they said, well, you just can't take foster kids home. I said, excuse me? Well, you have to be licensed.
You've done it.
I just took them home while you find them home. They said, well, you just can't do that.
Well,
I said, you got home, so make a story short, I ended up getting my home license, which I hadn't planned to, but I didn't want to give up these boys and put them back on the street. And so I had to measure my rooms and the temperature and the refrigerator and the water, and I'm still thinking, I don't plan to get a license because I don't plan to keep them. Well, two were 12 and one was 13.
Oh, okay. So you had three boys. Now, were they, when you took them to school, did you put them in classrooms? I mean,
I had a principal. My annex office was next door to a middle school. And I told the principal, you know, put them in your teacher's classroom, find a teacher, and call me if social service comes and gets them. I like to say goodbye. And so that went on. And so I decided to, after I got my house license, then I decided to, well, okay, I keep them. And then after 7 months, I decided to open up a group home because I found out that there's so many other kids in my school system that were in the same situation.
Wow.
Wow.
I got a beautiful school system that I'm training my teachers and my principals, and everything's beautiful, but the missing link was the home.
Wow.
Right.
For these kids. So I ended up opening a group home, and then I could give them the type of nurturing environment that they need at home, instead
right.
put them in my school system where I train the teachers, and then things would be fine. But I still didn't plan to do it for 22 years.
Wow. That's amazing. That is amazing. So then with the children in your school that you found out were also in that foster system, were some of them homeless? Like, where were they going at night? Did some of them not have a place to go?
Well, what would happen, I would have my principal to give me the attendance every day at noon. And I want the attendance of not only the students, but I wanted the attendance of the teachers, because many teachers mm. weren't coming to school Fridays and Mondays. So I wanted the attendance. So I would look to see many of the students were missing. And
right.
I said, where are the students? I don't know. They, you know, must have run away and they're not in the school system. And I had my teachers and my principals to go find these kids. If they're not in your school, go find them. And wherever they moved, I got a permission from the judge and the mayor that I can go and send transportation to get these kids. I don't care if they went from one foster home to the next. I want my kids back in my school.
Right,
so we got to send a taxi to get my kids and bring them back to my school system. And so that
right.
was very successful.
Wow. So where were many of them that you hadn't found? Were they living on the street? Where had they been moved to other foster homes? Where
many of them were homeless for a while, or they were just runaways.
Wow.
Staying in the basement of somebody else's grandmother who made... These kids didn't, now the grandmother didn't know they were in the basement.
Wow.
Of this friend of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were survivors.
Mm.
Yeah.
So they would make,
yeah.
And I said to my teachers, you mean I got foster kids rather be out on the street than in your classroom? There's
wow.
something wrong with that.
Yeah.
When I taught, my students wanted to know why couldn't they come to school on Saturdays?
Wow.
And yet, kids don't come to school Monday through Friday. Of course, you're not there
right.
on Fridays and Mondays because you are substituted.
Mm.
We have been a substitute. So if you don't like school, I think you need to find another profession.
But
mm. so my students are not coming to school Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and you're not there on Fridays and Mondays.
Wow.
I change all of that as assistant superintendent. Like, okay, that's why the kids not coming to school, because you don't want to be there either.
Oh, wow. So what's happening in the classroom?
And I talk about that in the book, Driven to Succeed,
okay.
in addition to my life story, how I was driven. My mother died when I was 3.
Wow.
And I had a foster mom. I didn't know she was my, I had a stepmom. And I didn't know she was my stepmom until they closed the school down in Virginia. Because if they want to integrate the school, was the resistance from the Brown versus Board of Education.
Right,
and so
right.
they closed the school there in 1959 because they didn't want to adhere to the Brown versus Board of Education that was passed in 1954. So the schools
right.
were closed 5 years.
Oh,
and my father sent me away so I would not, I was in fifth grade. So he didn't want me to miss any school, so he sent me away. And I was like a foster kid when he sent me away to finish my high school. And I was devastated. You know, just imagine the families being broken up, you being sent away to stay with strangers.
Yeah.
People don't want to go to school with you. I didn't know anything about racism then. And just know that whatever they didn't, why they didn't want to go to school, I kept saying to myself, if they knew me, they would like me. You know, I don't know why they don't want to go to school because... You know, I'm a very nice person. I'm very smart, and everybody likes me. I'm a teacher's favorite. I'm a dad's favorite. So,
mm.
you know, why don't you want to go to school with me? But never got the answer. But my father sent me to Norfolk, and I was devastated. Finished Booker T. Washington High School, Norfolk State, and then the rest is history.
Wow, that is quite a story.
And, Naima, there's kind of a story because Dr. Hattie, in her way, is a queen. Just like our Queen Charlotte, and how she reached out to help young people. Queen Charlotte did the same thing in the 1700s. She found orphans in London, young girls, just
wow.
like Dr. Hattie said, who had nowhere to go and nothing to do, and she trained them in how to do seamstress work and how to embroider and how to make curtains. And just like Dr. Hattie did, help the young people, the Queen here 300 years ago, was helping orphan girls get skills so they could go out and make a living, and they wouldn't have to be prostitutes in the street and have to do the, you know, the really, the things you do when you have no skills out in a street. Of other ways. So I love that story that Dr. Washington tells, because it's a story that more people need to imitate and more people need to do.
Absolutely. That is so powerful. One person.
It is. I think a lot of people would see this going on and wouldn't know what to do about it.
Yes,
you know, we see
young
people hanging out on the street. We might want to help them, but we don't know what to do about it.
Well, that's one of the things. People are so afraid now to offer help, but that really is the answer. Well, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And if you've just tuned in, well, if you missed the first half hour, you need to go back in the archives after the show is over and to hear the story. These two powerful women authors are giving us some wisdom and giving us some inspiration on what we can be doing to change the world. So we'll be right back after this quick break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak, and we'll come right to you and get your thoughts. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us. The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
About finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down to earth. Solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Hi, I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters. We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex.
Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, executive producer, and joining us live from London, England, is our first Saturday host, Jana. And we've got some exciting guests today, Dr. Stephanie Myers and Dr. Hattie Washington, some powerful women authors, and we're so excited to hear your stories and get your inspiration. So I'm grateful that you're joining us today, Female Solution Global Radio TV.
Okay. Hi, everybody. We're back. I'd like to ask you a couple more questions, Stephanie, and then go back to Hattie's fascinating story. I'm just wondering, how did you decide to start writing about the Invisible Queen?
Okay. I was really researching on the internet one night and just really ran into a big picture on the web that said Black Queen of England. And I thought, yeah, sure, this can't be. How could I not know this? Because I've always been a big reader and in school, and I thought if it were true, someone would have taught it to us when we were taking history classes. So how could you overlook something like this? So I started researching, and then the more I got into it, the more shocked I was at all that went on with this woman. And my husband, who is our publisher in our company, he decided, okay, if you're going to spend this much time, we'll just bring out a book on this. And so that's how we really selected the subject. But this woman, she discovered Mozart. And when you consider one of the most famous composers in the world was Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, he came to her with his parents when he was 8 years old and played music for her. And she was such a keen listener and a musician herself. Because as you know, black women have many sides to us. Just like Dr. Washington talked about being an assistant superintendent, and she's a foster mom, writer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Queen Charlotte was a musician, in addition to being the queen, and in addition to being someone who helps people. So that's how I got into writing the story.
You just came across her sort of by accident?
Yes, it's fair to say that it was definitely by accident.
There was a film about King George III called The Madness of King George, and she's played by a white actress. She's played by Helen Mirren.
Yes, she was played by Helen Mirren in the movie The Madness of King George, and that was totally wrong. Many times in history, characters have been white.
They attempt to rewrite history, but it wasn't really like that. So well done for telling us the truth. So tell us a bit about your writing process. Do you have a set time to write?
Well, I wish I did. When the experts tell you to write, they say it should be a certain time every day and you should be very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
But because we have a minority-owned business and I work in a lot of civic things, Black Women for Positive Change, I kind of write when I can. That's not the best way to do it.
Okay.
That's the way I do it. I kind of fit it in. It's not disciplined, unfortunately.
I'm sure there are many, many working writers who are doing the same thing. Although, yes, as you say, we do say, write every day, write at the same time every day. But the reason why we say that is that it facilitates the process. It can make the process smoother if your mind knows, right, this is the time to write. I would say the same thing about meditation. Once you tell your mind, look, this is the time every day I'm going to meditate, your mind sort of falls in line. But it doesn't mean you have to force yourself to do it if that doesn't work for you. So what advice would you give to aspiring authors?
Well, Dr. Hattie may have a different, I call her Aunt Hattie because that's her nickname around us, but Dr. Hattie might have a different approach. But no, I haven't gotten into that regimen, and I should, and hopefully one day I will, Zana, but I know you're a great author, and it's good to hear that you're so disciplined.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. I can be disciplined.
Well, Zana, we've got a comment from our Facebook family. Deborah Smith is our third Saturday host. She says, welcome, ladies, and she says, wow, this is interesting, and she says that this is a book for the Book of the Month Club, so John, I think you're kicking off our Book of the Month Club. We're going to have on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show so we can encourage people to buy these books. I think everybody needs to know this story about these
books. I agree. Everybody needs to know this story. So if you're going to advise somebody, Stephanie, who was aspiring to write, what advice would you give them?
Well, I would advise them to fall in love with the story. Because
right.
Writing a book takes an incredible amount of time and effort and dedication. So I think the first thing is really, really love the story and want to tell the story. I really felt a connection for some reason with Queen Charlotte when I met her. I just felt that she wanted her story told. So if you can find a mission, I think that's the way to go with it.
Right, just write from the heart. I think that's so important. I think what you're saying is really, really important. I'm going to come back to you because I've got a couple questions for you, but I'd like to ask Hattie a couple questions first. And anyone's listening, if you have a question for my guests, my Black women authors, please phone in. Sorry. Please phone in on 515-605-9325. And if you're outside the United States, put 001 in front of that. So it's 001-515-605-9325. And before I forget, Stephanie, what is your website?
It's www.myerspublishing.com. Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, publishing.com.
And we also have a website for Black Women for Positive Change. I'm going to talk about that a bit later, but we have an author's corner. So if you're interested in finding out about Black women writers and our work that we produce, check out the author's corner on Black Women for Positive Change. Now, you were talking about being the foster mother to more than 100 boys and young men, which I think is just incredible. It's just amazing. And what were some of the triumphs you experienced in this work?
What
were some of the triumphs?
The triumphs that Dr. Hattie experienced.
Yeah, your successes and triumphs in doing this fostering.
Would you repeat the question? I'm not quite hearing you.
She said, what were some of the triumphs that you had in your fostering, you know, perhaps seeing some people's lives change as a result of your intervention in their lives?
Yes.
Now, this book is only has two chapters in it about the foster boys home. I talk, as I said, about my background. I talk about how I raised my two daughters. One is a physician, one is an attorney, and I talk about parenting skills of that. And I talk about a 90-year-old aunt who was abused as a child. And I talk about strategies for people who have been abused, who witnessed suicide, et cetera, in the book. So the book has different facets in addition to the foster boys home. But But the triumphs, in addition to being able to see these young men who were supposedly behavior problems behind in every grade in school, to give them a home and to help them become academically successful and to look forward to going to college. And many of them were the first in their family to graduate from high school. And so college, because I have a scholarship fund there where the proceeds from my books and my merchandise go to that endowment. So they can look forward and say, okay, now I've got to finish high school because I got a scholarship waiting for me. So it helps them to visualize a future. And the word driven to succeed is a play on words. I was driven to Norfolk, be successful, but at the same time, I had the inner drive, and I tell people every day, it's okay for someone to discover you, but don't wait for someone to discover you. You got to have that inner drive so that you can be anything you want to be in life, but you got to work hard, believe in yourself, and then success comes because you have your faith in God. Family, and the family doesn't have to be biological family like I tell my foster boys. But you know, you also have favor with God. And so success is being driven by you with your faith in God to be successful. So the triumphs, I mean, every Mother's Day and even Father's Day and even every day, another week does not go by that I don't hear from one of my foster boys, ask me how I'm doing, if I need anything, and let me know how they're doing. And it's just beautiful to know that you made a difference in their lives. And
that is wonderful.
Success also is being able to give back and help someone else.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
And I know that the statistics show, I mean, there's a lot of, black people, predominantly are men in prison behind bars, and a lot of them are, and that's true on both sides of the Atlantic. In fact, proportionately, there are more black people in prison in Britain than there are in the United States. And a lot of the people are in prison because they don't have basic skills, like basic reading and writing skills, because they've missed out on education. So do you have a sense that you've actually saved people from ending up behind bars?
I don't know if I quite heard the question, but I do want to say that not all of my foster boys were African-American. You know, they were foster kids, and we had, you know, white, we had mixed kids, we had, even had a kid from Africa. But one one thing, they were brothers.
Wow.
They protected each other. They supported each other. So, a couple of my white boys went to a mostly all-black school because that's where the boys home was. And one day, one of the black boys was picking on a white boy, and because you didn't have too many white kids in that school, and one of my boys said, hey, don't pick on my brother. That's not your brother. He said, that is my brother, and if you pick on him again, you'll see. And so the other foster boys, I had about 8 foster boys in that school. The other foster boys came up and looked at the other kid like, yeah, he is my brother. And then they went and walked the hall hugging each other.
Oh, wow.
And they stay in touch today. And on Facebook, we have a group that we chat at least once a month, as many of the foster boys that can. And the white kids tell me when they've had a baby and when they're, how they're doing.
That's so lovely. That's so lovely.
They don't see race. And they get along, and they still call me Aunt Hattie. All of them call me Aunt Hattie. I don't care what color they are, I'm Aunt Hattie. My boys and my board members and volunteers, everyone call me Aunt Hattie.
Okay, can I call you Aunt Hattie?
Excuse me?
Repeat that.
She called you Aunt Hattie.
Okay, I'm going to go through all of your books at the end. But just can you remind me, please, Aunt Hattie, which one is the one where you talk about fostering all these young people?
The students at the university. university would call me Dr. Aunt Hattie.
Okay.
So which one of your books specifically
looks like she's about 20 years younger than us, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They call me Grandma Naima, you know.
Oh, wow. They call me Auntie, but, you know, we don't need to get into all that right now. But, yeah, did you hear the question, Aunt Hattie?
Yeah, can you say that again? Repeat your question, please.
I said, which one of your books, we're going to go through all of your books, but which one of your books specifically talks about fostering these young people?
Oh, she said she had two chapters in that book that talked about it.
Which
and the rest of them other things. And we had a comment from Deborah. She said, God had other plans for you, Dr. Hattie. Bless you. You know, definitely.
That's
I don't
right.
think
That's
there's
right.
any
So can you tell us which book it was?
I think that was me.
You know, in today's society, people are afraid to talk to young people. If you see them doing something, you just say, well, somebody ought to do something about those kids.
Right.
They say, when you say somebody, one thing is pointing back to you.
Right.
That's right.
So you
That's
have
right.
to be the one. We're from the country. I grew up in Virginia. Everybody knew everybody. And everybody,
right.
if you saw
right.
you would say, stop doing that. Don't let me call your parents.
Exactly.
And I'm sure if I see a kid, I don't care. People say, well, you shouldn't have done that. Suppose you put them in your car. Suppose they rob you. Well, I had a feeling about these kids. God
right.
gives you that.
Right.
And so when I asked them, they said, who are you? And I told them, and they told me what the problem was. I just had a sense that they told me because they wanted help.
Yeah.
And when
exactly.
I said, get in the car, they said, excuse me?
They're looking for parenting, right?
I knew that.
They're looking
you know,
for parenting.
I
they're looking for someone to look after them.
Back to my office after I stopped by McDonald's, got them something to eat.
Oh, that helps.
And then, of course,
did you hear my question, Aunt Hattie? Did you hear my question?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Did you hear
were
my
you
question?
Asking? Yeah, she was explaining about when she. Got the children in her car, and what were you asking?
Sure. Yeah, I'd like to know which book it was which focuses on the parenting, on the fostering.
Oh, did you hear her answer?
Which
no,
book
what's the
talk?
Name of the book?
Cause you talk about it in Driven to
Driven
Succeed,
to
right?
Succeed.
Yeah,
okay.
She said she had two chapters in that from Driven to Succeed.
But the last
okay,
book,
thank
which
you
is
for
an
that.
Anthology, Pink, my chapter in this book is talking strictly about Aunt Hattie's place and the sacrifices that I made, but I
right.
talk about better to be obedient to God than to think about sacrifices because you don't know what the sacrifice is going to be if you're obeying God.
Mm.
And so I talk
right.
about all the sacrifices that I made that I didn't know I was going to make, but in the end, God rewards you. You don't do things for reward, but he rewards you because you obeyed what he told you to do.
Mm.
And I talk
okay,
about
but I mean, this book is also accessible to people who don't believe in God, right? It's accessible to everyone?
Are you asking, is it accessible to people who don't believe in God? So
yeah.
If
is it accessible
they,
to everyone?
Will they still get the message?
Without a doubt. Because we talk about values and morals and ethics.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And so whether you believe in whatever your highest being, you believe in ethics. You believe in treating
right, exactly.
people right.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Giving back. So it's not a religious type of book. It's a book
okay.
for people who want to do good and give back and help someone else come along.
Mm,
excellent.
That,
this sounds so
question.
Beautiful. It's just so beautiful. So tell me, I'd like to ask both you and Stephanie, tell us about the month of nonviolence. What is the month of nonviolence? We have these terrible, terrible pictures coming on the news now every day about what's going on, the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And it's just awful. And I think we need nonviolence now more than ever. So tell us a bit about the month of nonviolence. How did it come to be?
Okay, well, I'll respond to that initially. Our organization, Black Women for Positive Change, is a group of people who we're interfaith. So we have Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindu. We're multicultural, even though we're called Black Women for Positive Change. We have people with different backgrounds. And we came together, and our initial goal was to strengthen and expand the American middle class. We wanted to foster ownership and prosperity and wealth building. And then Trayvon Martin got killed, and it was all over the world on the news. And we knew these things had been happening with our children in the communities, being killed by people. But the Trayvon Martin situation happened when Barack Obama was president, and the juxtaposition of seeing a Black man in the White House and a Black child killed coming from a convenience store really upset us. So we said, look, we cannot promote prosperity unless we change the culture of violence. And, Jonna, I remember it was you who said, change the culture of violence in America, and then you said, and the world. That was your contribution to our goal, and the world. So that has really been a mission. And what we've been trying to say for the past 10 years is that violence is cultural. It is something that people learn to do and think about, and we must change the way people think. It's devastating to see what's happening in Ukraine. I'm very upset to see the families and the mothers. More upset to see the African kids prevented from getting on trains and being discriminated against as they try to escape. So this whole issue of violence is something that America was founded on violence. Slavery was a violent institution. The genocide of the Native American people here in this country was violent.
That's right.
The indentured servants who came over here in the bottoms of ships and became indentured, there was a lot of violence there. And it's a way that we have started to think. And our anger, a lot of people feel they take pride in their anger. They feel like they can really fight and confront a situation. They take pride in that. Well, anger and
conflict. Look what happened with the Capitol last year. People storming the Capitol steps.
So we started the day of nonviolence one day. Then we went to a week of nonviolence. And then this is our report in 2021. This was the month of nonviolence. And we had activities in 25 states across America. Zana had an activity. She does her blogging. A nonviolence blogging carnival on the internet, and we had adults and young people come together to discuss how can we change the anger and the conflict, how can we change the school, how can we change the community centers, but most important, how can we change families, because we have a saying that violence begins at the kitchen table, and a lot of times...
Right, absolutely.
And that's what we have to address also. So we will have a month of nonviolence in 2022. And I reach out to all of the listeners of the Female Solution. You can put on an activity in your house, in your backyard, at your church, at your job, at City Hall, wherever you can organize an activity. It might be around domestic violence. It might be around gang violence. It might be around any issue that you think is relevant that we have to look at and talk about how can we change. So that's what the month of nonviolence is all about, changing the culture of violence in America and the world.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Yeah, and also just want to remind everybody, if you want to post a blog to the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence, we'll be accepting blogs from June, and I will talk more about that coming towards when we're going to start accepting blogs. But this is going to be our ninth year of the Blogging Carnival for Nonviolence, and it's part of the month of nonviolence.
Okay,
our Blogging Carnival is part of the month of nonviolence, which is held by Black Women for Positive Change. But these opportunities are open to everybody. They're not just for Black women. They're open to everybody.
Is to provide opportunities for young people. So it's okay to say don't be violent and be nonviolent, but if you don't give them opportunities that young people can do, then it's like, okay, so what do we do? So one of the things she's come up with our group is to provide different opportunities that students may enjoy doing, essay writing, jazz concerts. But one of the things my foster boys liked that Dr. Myers and the group did was to produce two movies.
Wow.
Okay.
And one of the movies that my boys watched about being nonviolent gave two scenarios. What happens if you become violent and you do this, what your life looks like, and then if you think about it on second thought and you do the right thing and what your life looks back like doing the right thing, they can visualize that, and then they wrote about their feelings about that. So that was really powerful, Dr. Myers, when my boys did that exercise and responded as a result of watching on second thought that beautiful movie that we produced.
Wow.
So that's
we
want to try to get them back involved also. And we're still, the movie is still available. It's on the website, blackwomenforpositivechange.org.
Yes.
People can show this film to their own kids or to the local school and let us know if you do it. Because if you have a film screening, we encourage people to have an essay contest. Ask
yes.
the kids, what do you think? Because a lot of times adults don't ask young people what they think. We're so busy doing all the talking.
Exactly.
Give them a chance to operate. And they have a lot on their minds, for sure.
They really do.
So that Black Women for PositiveChange.org?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see a link on there that says movies or films. And the films are on YouTube. So people can click on YouTube, and they can go to On Second Thought on YouTube. And we have a second film called Drop, A Story of Triumph.
Yes.
And those two films are available. We raised the money. We wrote the scripts. We hired the film crew. We did the casting with the actors. And it just showed what women can do if you just decide, make your own movie. You don't have to go to Hollywood and get them to commission. Write your own story.
Wow. Well, you've definitely given me a thought to create, and I think that we'll talk further about this, Jonna, because I can see a movie of some things that can really be life changing. But we'll have to talk about this after the show for sure. We got to take another quick break, and then we'll come right back.
Okay.
And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call. 515-605-9325. Press 1 when you're ready to speak, and we will come right to you and get your thoughts. And if you are on our switchboard now and have something to say, just press 1. And if you're calling from out of the United States, call 001-515-605-9325. And again, press 1 when you have a thought you'd like to share. And we'll be right back after this quick break, so stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
In to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Because I keep getting into arguments with people about it. But a lot of black people say to me, we have to hit our children. We have to beat our kids. And I personally have a big problem with that, what I call parental violence. And people tell me that it's part of our culture as black people. And I completely disagree with that. I think this is learned behavior, and I think it goes back to slavery times where people were brutalized. But I want to know what you two think, because children who are involved with violence or witness violence inside the home are more likely to get involved with violence outside the home. So let me hear your thoughts. What are your thoughts about this, Stephanie?
Okay, I'll respond first, and I'm sure Dr. Hattie will have a lot of input into this.
Absolutely.
Like I said earlier, violence begins at the kitchen table. So much violence begins in the home. It happens between the parent and the child, and it happens between the brothers and the sisters, and it happens between the fathers and the mothers. And many children witness violence between their parents as they're coming up. We had, during the last month of nonviolence, we had an incredible workshop where a woman talked about watching her mother being beat her entire childhood until she was a teenager. And she talked about how when her father came home, she would hide in the bedroom to see what his tone of voice was, because she could tell if he was angry when he came home from work. And if he was angry, it would escalate, and he would eventually go in and start fights with her mother. Her mother was on the call, and we asked her mother, did you go to your local minister? Did you go to the law enforcement? And no one was there to help her. Now, this was 20 or 25 years ago, before a lot of awareness was in the communities. But the minister that she went to, he was a violent abuser himself.
Wow.
And he wouldn't do anything, and he told her that she needed to go home and live under the supervision of her husband, and she shouldn't be starting trouble.
I've heard this story before.
It's really a tragic situation, but we have to have these conversations among mothers and their daughters. You have a lot of young women now, particularly girls who are being trafficked, and they are living in violent situations.
Yeah, because I've heard the story before, Stephanie, about people, a woman going to the pastor, and the pastor saying, well, were you nice to him? Did you fix him a nice meal when he came in the door? And basically blaming the woman, saying, look, you need to change your behavior in order for your husband or your partner to stop beating you. You know, blaming the victim.
You know, Jana, I had a conversation with a good friend who is a female pastor that strongly believes in corporal punishment. And you know, we had a very spirited conversation because her belief is that this is the best way that you should prepare your children and teach your children the concept of obedience to God. And that was kind of distressing, but I find that a lot of religious people, they tend to have that indoctrination that godliness somehow is necessary, for violence is necessary for godliness. And I don't know how you go about undoing that indoctrination, but I know that it is a very common thing that people experience. And
really,
you know,
this is what I call blaming God for your own bad behavior. Right?
So,
that's what I call it.
The mood he was in, but all of this violence that was going on in her family that she told me about. And I had no clue. And then when I told my cousin, who just started crying, he's a grown man, and he said, now I understand why my father used to beat the heck out of us for no reason. We would walk on eggshells, and he would come home angry because a white man did this, and somebody called him back, and he would just take it out on his family.
Right.
And so he knew why his daddy would be so angry, because his father used to abuse them. So, again, we go out of our way to make sure that we don't abuse our kids. Now, I need to say, as a teacher and as a sister superintendent and a mother of foster kids, it's against the law to even spank kids.
Right.
So if you don't have any other strategies other than spanking,
But then you're not going to be a good teacher. You're not going to be a good foster parent because those kids know I'm calling 911.
That's right.
And even
right,
have your
exactly.
own kids telling you they're going to call 911 because they know child abuse. But there's so many other strategies you can use, like I was telling you, Dr. Stephanie, my come up with for opportunities for kids to do different
yeah.
things, get their mind
yeah.
off of things, and to help parents to be a parent. I mean, I have all kinds of strategies I use my foster kids that are in my book. I do parenting workshops on what to do. I have a daughter who's as
okay.
a doctor and a lawyer. I think possibly in the whole time I reared them, maybe one or two spankings, and that takes you for 10 years. Because you need to look at you and know your eyes and know what you mean. You can look at a kid in church, and they know what you mean, like that look. And many black mothers got that look for the boy,
absolutely.
Too.
We all have it. I'm not a mother, but I have that look, too. Yeah, we all have it.
Take away some of their things, and after they take away those phones, take away something that they really enjoy, and you don't really need to do a lot of spanking, because spanking many times, next time you got to spank them more and more and more.
Right.
Because it just wears off after a while.
Well, Dr. Hattie,
I was at a workshop in Pittsburgh, and we were talking with a bunch of kids about this very subject, about violence and why were they so violent to each other, you know, brothers and sisters fighting and the kids and the gangs. And so one young man, he answered and he said, the reason why I'm so violent and I like to fight all the time, he said, because when I get up at 7 in the morning to get ready for school, everybody in the house is fighting. My mother's screaming at
really?
Us, telling
wow.
us to get ready. She's got to go to work. She's angry. My brother is mad at me because I'm taking his wearing his clothes or his jacket. He says, we fight for a whole hour before I leave the house. He says,
oh my gosh.
There are people on the street corner just teasing me and saying things and calling me out and making comments. Then when I get on the bus, I end up fighting with the kids on the bus because they're
right.
fussing over who's going to sit where and what's going to happen. He said, by the time I get to school, I've been in fights for about an hour and a half. And the first person that says anything to me at school, I'm ready to deck them. So he
right.
said to
yeah.
me, fight. Is because you adults don't give us any opportunities.
Mm.
You're not giving us anything to love. You're not giving us any alternatives. And so this is all we have. So one of the things we created with Black Women for Positive Change that we're trying to institute this year is opportunities as alternatives to violence.
Excellent, excellent. And I also think we need skills, particularly nonviolent communication. And one of my books is called Affirmation for Parents.
Innovative ways to capture the imagination of these kids. They don't have to play the video game and behead everybody for 2 hours. If you
right.
look at a video game,
yeah, that's right. But you see, Affirmation for Parents actually gives people some of the skills that we need
really
to communicate with
world
young people.
We need people like your organization, like Dr. Hattie. We need people to create things that the kids can do that they will enjoy.
You know,
they'll do that instead of the violence.
You know, Dr. Stephanie and Jana, like I was saying, you know, I had a very vigorous conversation with a female, very close friend of mine who's, you know, pastor and everything else, and she was saying how you have to spank the children because you have to, I guess, I don't know, beat the fear of God in them or whatever the thought is.
Right.
But I find that when you say to people that you should not hit your children, you should not use violence, they don't know any other strategies. They
right.
don't know
exactly.
any other methods.
Exactly. They don't have the skills that they need to really parent.
Yes.
So what would you say, I'm asking all three of you now, what would you say to someone who says to you, we have to beat our children, it's part of our culture? Because this is what I've had arguments with people about.
Well, their own emotion first. And then they can work with the kid. But a lot of our adults these days, they don't have a clue. They're selfish.
Yeah,
they're self-absorbed.
Right.
They're angry. They want to fight. And unfortunately, our black women are definitely a problem in this area. Because when you go out to the mall, you see some sisters talking to their kids really rough.
Horrible.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
It
really upsets me. We have the same problem in London. We have the same problem in London. And it really upsets me.
The understanding, and then the men will be a part of that. They don't want to be part of violence, but this is all they know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
My husband calls it the neck action. He says when the neck action gets started and we go to our thing, you know, we create a whole chaos in the household.
So if someone says you're part of our culture,
meeting
our children is part of our culture, what would you say to them?
I've been options to do. And when you start giving them those options, you find out that it's okay, that's humane, that's working. And the whole behavior modification system that I use in my school system and at home with my kids, you got to know what happens when you start using behavior modification.
Right.
Many times they're just going to ignore that behavior. You can get out on the floor and have a temper tantrum if you want to. And you don't just say, okay, get up off that floor, have a temper tantrum. I remember my daughter once, she had been around some white kids, and they told her how they got what they wanted at home. They just have a temper tantrum. And fall out on the floor. So I know my daughter did it one day. And so I said, so what are you doing? She said, I'm having a temper tantrum. I said, okay, well, go ahead and have it. If when you finish, the dishes are still going to be there, and just don't get your clothes dirty. And so when she got up, I guess she thought, well, it's not working in my house. You got to make sure. I remember I walked down the hall one day when I was assistant superintendent, and I heard the teacher, she was calling her students every name in the book, how stupid they were and how they were and how they ought to be in special education. I mean, I stood there for a minute. I couldn't stand it any longer. I walked in the classroom and told her to go home right then.
Good for you.
She took over the classroom, and I called the principal down.
Wow.
And I said, have you ever walked the hallway to find out what the teachers are calling these kids?
Wow.
And if so, do you not have to step in the classroom and teach, or are you just an administrator?
Wow.
You have to be an instructional leader. So I taught all of my principals how to be instructional leaders, not administrators, because he would have left the teacher there because they didn't know how to take over the classroom and teach. But again, you have some angry teachers, but you have some wonderful teachers out there who are doing everything and using their own money. But then you have some teachers out there that make it bad for everyone else, and they just don't know what else to do. So you really have to. You know, one other thing I want to say, in spanking, I remember once I was spanked my daughter with a necktie. Now, it didn't hurt her physically, but it hurt her feeling.
Right.
And
right.
I think she cried for almost a week. Every time she heard about it, I thought about it, like, oh, my mom really spanked me. I can't believe it. Yeah. So you got to train kids your displeasure.
Right.
And that's supposed to get to their heart and their psyche more so than the physical hurt.
Yeah.
So they don't want to displease you if they say, Mom, you're not smiling, or can I give you a hug? And he said, no, I don't want a hug today because, you know, I'm not pleased with your room. I'm not pleased. So that's, wow, I'm not hugging my mom today. Mm. And then when you hug them, like, oh, everything is okay. So come up with different strategies at your parents that you don't need to use spanking. Use something else if you're not smiling.
Yeah.
And I tell you all the strategies to tell my teachers when they are going to class and why you don't have to yell at students, what are some techniques you can use? And other teachers are wondering, do you have those kids hypnotized? Why? You just raise one finger, and everybody just crying. What does that one finger mean? What's the thing you teach your kids on day one?
Yes.
So I tell teachers how to do that, and parents too, that you don't need to be screaming and yelling, just that look.
Yes.
You know what that look means?
Yes.
And that's a good way of rearing kids that's very calm and peaceful and joyous, and you enjoy your kids.
You see, nonviolent communication is based on empathy, and a lot of empathy is to do with listening rather than talking. And I think as adults, we need to be listening to the children more, listening to young people, and teaching the young people listening skills.
Hours with nothing to do, you can only watch so much television,
right.
And so a lot of parents are tired, or they themselves don't know what's going on in their own city, that they can get on the train, get on the bus, drive the car. Go to the theater, go to the library, go and do things, create activities. And the kids love that. And our kids, they remind us of where we took them. We took them to every museum within car distance their entire lives. And now that they have kids, they're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's an alternative to being bored. No one wants to be bored.
Right.
You get bored,
yeah, absolutely.
You get angry,
absolutely.
And it leads to a problem.
Absolutely. Right.
I just wanted
to
come back to this question. Okay.
So, Johnny, you were making
a... come back to this question. So is it part of our culture as black people to beat our children?
It's not just us, though.
What is your response to that?
I've seen other people. It's not just us. It's pervasive of the slave experience. But I've seen other people in other situations as well. I think it comes down to the individual temperament of the parent. Like you're saying, you know, you got people got attitudes, they're angry, they're frustrated, they take it out on their children. And it can become a generational behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You learn it from your parents, and they learn it from their parents, and they learn it from their parents.
Yeah.
So we know where ours comes from, but it's not, from what I've observed, it's not a racial thing. I've seen abuse in all races. I have
sure. But I do think a lot of our patterns stem from slavery as well. I think, yes, you're right, there's violence in all cultures, but I do also think a lot of our patterns stem from slavery. Stephanie, what's your response to that?
It's the violence also, and suicide, and all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, I'm going to have to kind of slip away here, but I hope Dr. Hattie can
hear. So, Dr. Stephanie Myers, author of
The
Reasonable Queen.
So much insight and so much knowledge, but I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you. As I mentioned, Invisible Queen is available at MyersPublishing.com, and people are welcome to go to BlackWomenForPositiveChange.org. We're going to have a big voting rights campaign going, and that's a topic I hope the Female Solution addresses, because that's a whole other subject and a whole other show. But we have to take all these ideas and make sure at the polls people are registered and get out there and vote
for sure.
And in the fall, so we can talk about that in the future.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Donna, and thank you so much, Naima, and your sisters. I loved your ad with your sisters. That was beautiful.
Yes.
And thank you
so much for being on the show, Stephanie. I really appreciate it, and I'll be in touch soon.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be in touch because we have some plans. We definitely have to collaborate on some things.
Okay, let's do it. We've got to bring about positive change. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
All right. And we're going to take a break in a moment, Jana. You know, I'm just really excited to have met these wonderful queens who are really changing lives. One of the things I think is critical is giving people instructions on how to raise children without violence. Because every time I have a conversation with parents and I'm against hitting, they always say, oh, you're just going to let your children run wild. And they really don't have any other skills. They don't know any. They've never seen anybody use any. They may have seen other families. Maybe they assume, you know, oh, well, I've seen white people let their children run wild in the store and have tantrums. So that's the image they have.
We have that same issue in London, that white parents are not controlling their children, and we need to control our children.
We have the same thing in London,
that same conversation.
Yeah, and we don't know that there is a way to mold and shape behavior that does not require violence. Like Dr. Hattie is telling us about ways you use the power of your love and approval to let them know when you are pleased or displeased. And they respond to that at a very early age.
Oh, that's your stresshold bottom line. You see, many times our stresshold bottom line is so high up in violence that kids don't even pay you any attention until you start screaming.
Yes.
When you say, don't do that. They don't pay you any attention until you teach them what you mean, and you mean what you say. You're only going to say it once, and you're going to say it nicely.
Right.
And they expect for you to do it.
Right.
And so if you don't teach them back, they can wait for you to start screaming, I told you not to do that. Didn't I tell you not to do that? I told you not to do that. Then that's when they're going to listen.
Right.
But I teach my teachers, talk slow and low.
Mm. Right.
And low.
Right.
Speak, the more they're going to have to listen.
Right.
And the lower you speak, that means you're more upset.
Ooh, yeah.
Right.
And
right.
They're going to look at your eyes like, I can barely hear what she's saying. That means she's upset. Mm. So it's strategies how to make a normal kid, a gifted kid, is how you teach them. But you make them feel you expect from them. You make them feel that they are gifted and smart and nice and kind.
Yes.
If you tell them that's who they are, that's who they're going to become.
Yes.
Right. Right.
And that's where you're going to treat them. I mean, I got to do a workshop. I mean, I've been teaching teachers 22 years.
Before the show, we're gonna figure this out because we're going to have a plan in place because we need to teach. And once we do that, then we'll produce a whole different kind of human being.
I've already produced them. 100 foster boys and two daughters.
There's your proof right there. Your system works. All right.
I just shared my strategy. In fact, this one chapter, you need to read the chapter on raising the bar. That's the name of the chapter that I raised my two daughters.
Ooh.
Raising the bar.
Well, when we come back, Jana, I'd like her to maybe give us just a tidbit of that because I really want people to get this book.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to take a one last break, and then we'll be right back. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. If you're outside the country, call 001-515-605-9325. If you're on our switchboard now, press 1. We know you got something to say. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. And you have been listening to the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show, and this, of course, is Success Strategies with Jana, and we are welcoming Black women authors. And we're continuing on with the wonderful Dr. Hattie Washington, and she's got a story to tell. So we will be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to speak.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibrations. Shalom.
To an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, 10, 12, 2 p.m. Central Time.
First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution. For the last 25 minutes of the Female Solution, and we're having Success Strategies with Jana, and we've heard from some fantastic black women authors, and this is an opportunity for us to learn how to properly parent. So I'm really excited to hear some strategies on parenting, because I hear so often people believing that if you don't hit your children, you're not going to be able to control them, and so they simply continue to beat. But if I may ask Dr. Hattie Washington to give us some insight from her book, what are some of the ways that you use to correct and motivate your children?
Well, when my girls were small, we lived overseas. We were in Greece for 2.5 years, and then we were in Scotland for 2.5 years. My husband at the time was in the military.
Oh, wow.
And so I always felt as if I wanted to be part of the local culture, as opposed to living in the DOD houses or living in the, going to all of the American activities. So we lived in the
DOD
British.
Is Department of Defense, right?
Yes, and so I had my kids to go to the British school and the British grammar school instead of the Department of Defense school, because I always, if I'm going to move overseas, I want them to be entrenched in that. So they learn to appreciate that even today they like British shows on TV, anything that comes on, whether it's Downton Abbey or The Gilded Age or Bridgerton. They like those because of the culture they were in. So
right.
One of the things you got to do, even in Scotland, keep them busy with things that they like to do, whether it's country dancing, the Harlem Fling, reading books. Just keep them busy and don't keep their mind idle. So I had them even taking calligraphy when we lived in Scotland. And then coming back to the United States, they were in ballet. They were taking piano lessons and voice lessons and reading books. They had to read one book a week, and then they had to do a book report in 2 minutes. And I had a template, which I did. My foster boys had the same template. I taught my teachers how to do the same template. It's like the title of the book, the author's name, what happened first, next, then, after that, and finally. So when they stood up to talk about the book, that's what they had to say. The title of the book was this. The author's name was this. First, this happened in the book. Next, this happened. Then, after that, and finally. And then what was the moral of the book? So that's just like a master's thesis. That's all you got to talk about when you're doing a master's thesis, when you're doing a dissertation. It may not be called that, but that's exactly what you do with the beginning and the literature, et cetera. So in keeping their mind busy, when I was teaching at Norfolk State, I would take them with me to class.
Mm.
And they would sit in the back of the class while I'm teaching, and my older daughter would read the chapter.
Wow.
That the student was supposed to read. And then she would raise her hand, and then my students got embarrassed. So he's a sixth grader, read the chapter, know the answers, and we don't. So they were always involved with whatever I was involved with. That's one of the reasons I let my students at the university bring their kids to class.
Mm.
They said, I don't have a babysitter, so I can't come to class, Dr. Washington. You don't have a problem? Bring your kid to class.
That's
it's like,
great.
So I have many kids sitting in my class at the university because parents don't have to pay for babysitter.
And if they say, well, they're going to act up. No, they don't act up in my class.
Mm.
And I prove to you, great class.
So when they had children who came to class that might, you know, get loud or unruly, what things did you do to those children?
I would say to the kids, I said, come up here. I want you to sit next to Dr. Washington.
Mm.
And I want you to press this PowerPoint. When I get ready to go to the next one, I want you to press that button. Can you press that button?
Mm.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, I'll let you know when. I will find something for the kids to do. And I will come back and give them crayon and draw something for Dr. Washington. At the end of the class, I want you to show me what you've done. I mean, there's so many things that teachers and parents can do. You don't have to say, I'm not going to bring my kid because they're going to interrupt your class, Dr. Washington. Let me worry about my class. You just bring your kid on the class, and that was one of the things that I did. But getting back to my daughters, I always had them involved with something. And what was so interesting, they want to be a doctor, want to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have them to start reading books now. I bought the whole science series of books, the whole classic book, Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights. And you remember that whole class? I bought all that.
Wow.
For my kids. So they had to read a book a week and do a book report. And then I had something called 3,000 words that all executive CEOs ought to know.
Ooh.
And
wow.
My daughters had to learn 50 new words every week. So during that time, they were on cassette tapes. So I would play the tapes at night when they go get in bed after they read the story and did the homework. And they would start like perspicacity. They would spell it, and it means this, and use it in a sentence. And so just like every kid knows every word to every song, when did they learn that? It's a subconscious thing. And so you play these vocabulary words, and before you know it, they're saying these words, and they wonder, when did I learn perspicacity? When did I learn? So those are strategies I use dealing with the psychological involuntary learning that many teachers and we as parents don't even take advantage of. Our mind is like a sponge. But we don't use all of these techniques because they're not visible. They're invisible. So I talk about it in my book as well. And then I would say when my daughter got into medical school, I got her assigned. It says Sherelle A. Washington, M.D., first year. And she said, Mom, I'm not a doctor yet. I said, but you're going to be. So put this
right,
in the room.
Right.
Look at it.
Wow.
Sherelle A. Washington, M.D. And then with my daughters in law school, I got Cheryl W. Washington, Esquire. First
Woo.
Year. Put these slides out to people said, I'm going to graduate 2 years from there, May such and so. She said, but Mom, I'm not a lawyer yet. But put your phone number on it. So when people say, put your phone number, give them that card. And that reinforces in their mind, since I gave that card, I got to be a lawyer now because I said I'm going to graduate in May 19th.
Wow.
So I teach teachers how to help kids to visualize their success. If you don't visualize your success, you don't know if you're going to be successful because you don't have a plan of action.
Right.
And you don't live, you don't know where the heck you're going while you leave the house.
Ooh.
You get in the car and say, where am I going today? You know where you're going. You may go a different way. You may go this way today. You may be a detour over here, and you may have to go a different direction, but you know where you're going.
It
may take you longer to get there because the road is blocked over here, and you got to back up sometimes to go a different way. That's where life is.
Yeah.
So parents, in teaching the kids, teachers are teaching kids. Many teachers are parents, too.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
See every kid as gifted and talented. I used to teach special ed. And I used to say to my students when I walk in, wow, I'm so glad I got the best class in school.
Woo.
And the kids would look at me like, we have behavior problems and we are special ed. And I said, special means that you are special in education.
Mm.
That means you learn differently. But all of my kids are gifted. And I'm going to tell you why, and this is what we're going to do. And we have the best class in school, I'm going to show you. And our first day, I would tell them how we're going to walk down the hall and how we're going to go to the cafeteria. And this is what I'm going to do when it's time for you to line up. I'm going to raise my hand, and that means for you to stand up and stand behind your chair. Then when I show two fingers, that means you lift your chair up and put it under the table. Don't push your chair. I don't want to hear all of that. That means lift it up and put it on the table. And then when I do like this again, that means line up, and I give them all this is your who's first, second, third.
Mm.
So they know. And I said, we're going to practice it. Let's go there. We're going to practice it.
Wow.
So now these special ed behavior problem kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we go in the cafeteria, and I told them, I said, now you watch how the other teacher will be looking at you all. Because you're the best class in the school. Now you watch. And they say, Miss Washington, we were the best class. I said, didn't I tell you I always get the best class?
Woo! How powerful is that?
I never have any behavior problems out of my kids. And the teacher used to wonder, why got those kids hypnotized? This is a bad class. Do you know that? I know those kids. It's like, well, no. These are the best students. I always, you tell kids and they become what you tell them they are. They become who they believe that you believe they are.
Yes.
Same thing with your own kids.
Yes.
I tell my kids how smart they are, how beautiful they are, how good they are, and the only thing I got to do is look at you. And you know what that look means, and like, I don't have to yell.
You're disappointed in you're acting less than what I know you are.
There you go. So you enjoy your kids. You're not yelling and screaming, and you can't take them out in public. I took my foster boys any place in public.
Mm.
And they dress up in a shirt and tie, and people said, what private school are those kids from? Can you imagine 28 foster boys taking them to the symphony orchestra?
Wow.
And people, what private school are they from? And these are foster kids. What?
Mm.
What? No. I already taught them how to behave, taught them how to look. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. When you say yes, ma'am to a teacher, they already think you're smart.
Mm-hmm.
They say from a good home, because kids don't say yes, ma'am from a good home, right?
Right,
and
right.
So I tell them, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You're What in the world is that? How do you spell it?
How do you spell it?
Ma'am. Mm-hmm. How do you spell it? So anyway, I'm just from the old school. And so I teach my kids to say yes, ma'am. At one of my foster boys, I don't say yes, ma'am to anybody. That's like slavery time.
Well, that's interesting.
I say, well, let's put it this way. This is not a democracy. This is Unhatted's place.
Mm.
And when you get a house, you can put your name on it. Then you can say what you are, what you're not going to do. And I have a waiting list of kids that want to come to Unhatted's place.
Mm.
These are my rules. If you don't want to follow my rules, there's the door.
Wow.
Yeah, my boy, you need to run away from my habits, place. The foster care program got kids running away. I said, you don't run away from my habits, because if you run away, you won't be running back.
Ooh.
Because I had a waiting list. Social service couldn't wait to get their kids in our habits, place.
So what was the limit of number of children that you could have?
I had three homes. Each home had 12 kids.
Wow.
That's my motto. 12 kids.
12.
And social service said, you got enough room to have 20 kids. I said, no, I'm not worried about the room. I'm worried about my motto.
Yeah.
12 kids is all I want in a family.
Mm.
Right.
So they can get the attention they need and such and so.
Yeah.
And so I had three foster boys. The brand new one that I built for $4.5 million in Montgomery County from the ground up. And I used my house as collateral to get the loan from the bank, and I end up losing my house behind that because the governor changed his mind.
Oh, no.
And he had too many group homes, so he ended up closing 67% of them, so therefore I end up owing the bank $2.5 million, so I end up losing my five-car garage house that was left to me by uncle out of 15 nieces and nephews. He chose me to leave the house to, and I used the five-car garage, the pool room, and the servants' quarters, and I tore all that down, which was 6,000 square feet, and I built the foster boys' home right next door to my house, and I ended up losing my house and the boy. But I thought, you know, to whom much is given, much is required, and at least I've raised foster kids, and they can know the impact. I could have sued and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I thought, okay.
Well, the story's not over. You know, that's just
that's
a chapter in it. But, you know, you have a lot greater things to do because
absolutely.
There are so
I don't
many.
I have time to be in court suing somebody
yeah.
for this, that. The Lord has something else for me to do. That's
right.
what I wrote the book, and I put that in the book.
There you
you
go.
Know, so I said, okay, now let me just spend some time writing my book.
That's it. That's God doesn't close the door without opening a window. You know?
Absolutely.
So always
absolutely.
Another way. Yes. So now
and
you've been able.
My daughter, who is an attorney, had the law would have it when she was in law school. She used my boy's home as her project to help write the proposal.
Wow.
To go through the system because it took us 3.5 years to write the proposal to do good.
Wow.
I mean, with all these regulations, I don't want to do a business. I just want to keep some kids. I just,
right.
you know,
right.
keep kids in the country.
They make
somebody
money,
send
they
them down from the north and you keep them for several months and
yeah.
get them straight and send them on back. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a business and business plan and handbook and the menu and this. my proposal is this thick.
Oh, wow.
That I had to write. And thank the Lord for my daughter, who's in law school, helped to interpret all those regulations. And then she ended up being the executive director for 6 years.
Fantastic.
Because she was so wedded and close to the project and gave up practice in law to run the false abortion.
That is amazing. I mean, there's so many blessings that have come out of this. So many blessings.
So let me ask you something, Hattie, because, I mean, the work that you did with the foster children is just amazing. It's fantastic, and it's so inspiring. I would like to also hear about your involvement with Black Women for Positive Change and a month of nonviolence. So tell us a bit about how you got involved with Black Women for Positive Change.
It's so funny. A relative of mine, who lives in New York, namesake, Hattie Hess, told me about a good friend of hers that lived in Maryland, and she wanted me to meet her. She involved with this wonderful group, and she wanted me to just meet this other friend of hers. And when I met her and found out she was part of the Black Women for Positive Change, she invited me to a couple of meetings, and I liked what they were all about. I'm about positive stuff. I'm about giving back. And then I met Dr. Myers, and she was just a sweetheart of a person, and the activities that they were involved with, and it could fit right what I was doing, nonviolence, because I told my boys, we don't have violence at our head's place.
Right.
So we're not having fighting because you're violent. If you have any issues, you come see me. And so and I got involved with the video. I helped sponsor the film that we made, and then my boys were involved with looking at it and giving their viewpoint. And so it just fit with my ministry and my mission. And that's why I've been involved with Dr. Myers ever since I met the young lady who was part of a friend of my cousin who lives in New York.
Okay, and so what's your thank you for that. And what's your involvement with the month of nonviolence? I know you've mentioned the film. So do you do this essay contest every year?
Have I been involved in the essay contest?
Yeah, do you do the essay contest?
Every year. Do you still do it? Do you do it every year?
I've done it every year because when my foster boys were involved, I did. And when I was teaching at the university, I would have my students who were teachers, to get their students involved. But for the last couple of years, I've moved now to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And then my foster boy home is closed, so I've been concentrating on raising money for my boys to go to college.
Wow.
Right,
selling my other books so that proceeds can go to the scholarship fund. So I have not been involved in the last couple of years with the essay contest.
And how many of your boys have you sent to college?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, gee whiz. Some in college, some in the community college. Depends on some in the culinary arts school.
Wow.
Depends on what they're interested in. Some in the military.
Yeah.
So I would say about 80 to 85% of my boys have gone to some type of post-secondary school or successful in their job. And one called me last week to say he's going to go to law school.
Wow.
Because he's working at a law firm.
for anybody who's listening.
The law school.
Wow.
So, and he's been out of my Hattie's place like 10 years.
On Hattie's place.
So I still think
and
they
for
got
anybody
that
who's listening who's not from the States.
It's up to you to be driven to succeed.
That is powerful.
So anybody who's listening who's not from the States, when she says college, she means university.
I'm sorry, I said that again.
We mean university. In the States, we say college, but we mean university.
And I think in the States, college, from my understanding, it means a place that focuses on maybe one discipline, whereas university deals with multiple disciplines. I think that's the connotation of the meaning here.
I didn't hear the question, but I think she said
she was saying there and in the UK when they use the word college, but here they use the word university, and I was explaining.
No, I'm saying the other way around. In the States, we say college, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
College is where you do your undergraduate study.
College.
Right.
So in college, Maryland, in most places, it's a two-year program.
Yes.
You get
okay.
certification in whatever, electrician, the culinary arts, et cetera. But there are some four-year colleges.
Yeah. Because Carson State College
before it became a university. So right. was Norfolk State College, which is a four-year.
Sure.
So the word college, it just means that it's a community college.
Right.
Community college.
Or it could be, as you said, a four-year college, which is what we call university in Britain. So a four-year college is where you do your undergraduate work, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, that's where you do your undergraduate work. At a college, right?
Not necessary.
Sometimes you do graduate work at a college.
Yes. Yes. Some colleges do graduate work. It's just called college. They don't want to become a university.
Because university.
So college
I went to was a four-year college. It wasn't part of university, but I'm just saying, in Britain, college means something different. When we're talking about doing the undergraduate work towards a degree, that's the university.
Oh, I see.
Oh, they're in, yeah.
Yeah, in Great Britain. Now, I did want to ask, before we go, where people can get the book, Driven to Succeed?
Yes. And also, I didn't get to talk about my cookbook either. And my cookbook has won Amazon number one best-selling six different categories.
Wow. And what's the name of the award?
We're going to have to have you on again to hear about your cookbook, yeah?
Yes, you have to come back and
talk about
that.
And also, we talk about Women's Month. My last book called Sisterhood, The Power of Sisterhood with the Sisters for Sisters Network under Peggy Morris. And this is a wonderful anthology of wonderful authors telling their stories of success. So that's on my website. All these books are on my website, which is drhnwashington.com. www.drhnwashington.com.
drhnwashington.com.
drhnwashington.com.
Okay, so they can order your book then.
Thank you very much for that. And thank you so much for being on the show, Aunt Hattie. It's been delightful hearing about your work.
Because I have all kinds of T-shirts, and you go on my website, you see a whole store called The Driven Store. You can get, if you want to be motivated, you want to get somebody that's motivated, you can get a water bottle with Driven to Succeed on. You get exercise pants. I have a cousin who lost 100 pounds. And she doesn't go exercise unless she has Driven to Succeed on a T-shirt. She said, I can do it. I can do it. And so
Beautiful. Whatever
keeps motivated, Driven to Succeed is your self-driven. And I have all kinds of merchandise that people can get for people who need just a little bit of motivation. You got to wear it. Not
all
just
right.
to right.
say it.
Right.
See your vision.
That's
see
right.
your success.
I love it.
By wearing it.
See your success. Well, we want to thank you so much. We have got about a minute.
Thank you so much for being on my show. We'll have to have you back again to talk about your work because obviously you've got a lot of beautiful gifts to share. And I've also got a book for you to help raise money for university or college. I will send you the link, yeah?
Yes. We'll definitely have to have her back, and we will be getting in touch with you after the show because we got some work to do. We gotta have this parenting
class.
Oh my goodness!
Yes, we do. I want to give back as much as I can to help people to raise successful, beautiful kids. I don't care, boys, girls, or what have you. There's a way you can get to it. I haven't met a kid yet. I've been 35 years of teaching that I couldn't handle.
All right. So you got to learn how. Go to the website and get this book. Go to www.carinwashington.com and learn how to parent with peace and nonviolence.
Thank you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe, India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, John Cunha, France, merci, Spain, gracias, Italy, grazie, Egypt, shukran, Ghana, medasi, Nigeria, eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Jared, Kenya,
thank you, sweetheart,
Israel, toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.